This episode is brought to you by Nourish and Flourish, a handcrafted, independent publication taking readers on a journey from the soil to the stars. Subscribe today at nourishandflourish.site.
This week on Meat and Three, we're examining the true cost of convenience when it comes to when, where, and how we eat.
Dark stores enable workers to eat without any kind of thought to how they're getting their food or how it might have come to be.
DoorDash, Uber, and Lyft in the past have pledged to spend $90 million to try to exempt themselves from the law.
I could be wrong, but I think there's going to be significant regulatory pushback on driverless trucks.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Lisa Held coming to you live from Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., and you're listening to The Farm Report, a Heritage Radio Network show about the people, processes, and policies that shape how food is produced today. My guest today is Dave Herring, the Executive Director of Wolf's Neck Center for Agriculture and the Environment in Freeport, Maine. The center just launched a platform called Open Team, which they're calling the first open source technology ecosystem in the world to address soil health and mitigate climate change. Dave, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me.
So I'm super jealous because you're in Maine and I love Maine. So let's just get that out
well,
of the
we're,
way.
we're welcoming people up here, so we'd love to have you anytime.
Yeah, I was actually looking at where Wolf's Neck is, and it looks like it's just north of Portland. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. North and kind of east. North and east because of the way the Maine coast runs. But yeah, we're just 25 or 30 minutes from Portland, so we're kind of part of the greater Portland area, but we're also kind of just on the southern edge of what we call the Mid-Coast region.
Okay.
Up here in Maine that kind of runs up through kind of the Camden, Rockland, Rockport area.
Great. And is the farm is right on the water, is that right?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a crazy unique place and unique scene, and obviously we're going to talk about that, but it's spread along 4 miles of coastline right here in Freeport. Along there are about 800 conserved acres along the water here in Freeport that make up Wolf's Neck Center as well as Wolf's Neck State Park or Wolf's Neck Woods State Park, and it was all owned by the same family that donated the properties back in the 70s and 80s and dedicated them for future generations to enjoy and learn from.
Wow. Yeah, so tell me a little bit more about the background. Has it been a farm since the 70s and 80s, or like what's the history?
Yeah, exactly. So Wolf's Neck, historically known as Wolf's Neck Farm,
okay,
is made up of about seven different farms that a family purchased over the course of 20 or 30 years in the mid-20th century. So they came up vacationing from Philadelphia, actually, and purchased a summer home here in the area. And as the story goes, they, on the way to and from their summer home, they started seeing all these farms go on the market. And they were really conservation-minded, really appreciative of the role that local farms play, and so they purchased all of them that were on the market in the area, and essentially over the course of those decades, kind of combined them into one operation that we know now as Wolf's Neck Center, but for the better part of several decades was known as Wolf's Neck Farm. And they donated all of Wolf's Neck Farm to the University of Southern Maine in the mid-80s. And it didn't quite work out, I think, as maybe both the family and the university had planned. So after about 10 years, it came back, and that's when we started Wolf's Neck Farm Foundation, which is what we know now as Wolf's Neck Center. And so, that's just a kind of a quick snippet of the history.
Right. And so today, what does the farm look like? Like, what are you producing And I understand it's not, you're not just producing, it's like a research and training center?
That's exactly. So I a lot of times people say, well, what kind of farm are you and what do you produce? And I more often than not, the most accurate answer really is that we produce experiences, and that those experiences range from somebody coming for a couple hour visit to walk on our trails, to visit with the animals, maybe take part in an entry level program, an hour long program to learn about organic dairy or about pasture management or about the organic fruit and vegetable production. Or all the way up to somebody who comes here for a 2-year experience as part of our organic dairy, residential organic dairy farmer training program. So we launched that in 2015 in partnership with Stonyfield. So we actually have apprentices who will live and work on site for 2 years as part of that training program. And that's part of a national program called the Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship.
Huh.
And so there are farms all over the country that are part of that national training program that's really kind of designed to seed the landscape with the next generation of kind of pasture-based organic dairy farmers.
Interesting.
So mostly we're about experiences, but we also, anytime you're going to farm for training and research purposes, you also do have products. And
right.
So we sell our milk to Stonyfield. We have a small-scale diversified livestock operation where we have some heritage breed pigs and meat birds, as well as laying hens and eggs. We have about 6 acres, 5 to 6 acres of fruit and vegetable production, so a mixture of annuals and perennials, so everything from fruit trees to other fruits and vegetables that we sell through a small CSA program, about 30 or 40 shares of CSA, but I think the bulk of our produce goes through our kind of our on-site channels. So we have a farm store, a farm cafe, and we have a really wonderful series of events that we partner with local restaurants on to highlight our bounty here, as well as just connect people to our mission and to this place and to build our community.
Right. And what is that mission? Like, what's the overall goal of the center?
Sure. So our mission statement is quite brief, and I love it for that. It's transforming our relationship with farming and food for a healthier planet.
Huh.
And so that plays out in a variety of different ways, but really we're all about reestablishing the connections that people have lost over this last century or so to where food comes from. And we feel that because people are no longer involved in farming in the way that they once were, I mean, some stats that I like to throw out there, that 100 years ago, 95% of us played a role in producing food for people. And now that number is like 2%. And
yeah.
So that you probably know similar stats or those stats.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what that means is there's so many things that means, and really none of them are good. It's just been this mass consolidation that has created this disconnect. And that disconnect has us thinking that food should be cheap and should be convenient and available. And it's not. There are hidden costs of food that I think we're trying to help people see and understand what goes into farming and to diversified farming. And so we're really trying to reestablish those connections through our programs and through our experiences, through our events. We have a campground on site here that has 120 sites right along the water, and so that's a core part of kind of our entry portal, if you will, where we have this captive audience of 25 or 30,000 people who will come here each year, and so we're always trying to be creative about ways to connect them with this place, and whether it's through an experience or through food or you name it, there's It's a great way for us to achieve our mission.
Yeah. Do you use the water at all? Do you farm like oysters or anything like that? Like, being right on the coast, that's such a kind of interesting opportunity to have both land and ocean-based farming.
It totally is, and I'm glad you asked that question, Lisa. So we, right now, we're not involved in any enterprises that involve the water. So the working waterfront in Freeport and where we are here is heavily tidal. Mm. So it is a productive clam flat, and there are commercial clammers that are out working the flats here throughout the year. Aquaculture is a growing an area of growing interest, certainly along the coast in Maine, and certainly in Maine as well. And mm-hmm. so we are interested in finding the right partners with whom to partner with on food production on offshore as well as onshore. And
right.
so we're in discussions and really just trying to figure out what the right approach is. You know, it's not our core competency, but because, like you said, because we have this place on the water and this mission that could very well translate to food production offshore, we're interested and in discussions.
Yeah, I think my mind is just like on that because last week my guest was talking about farming seaweed and oysters, and so I'm like, normally we're always talking about land-based farming, and that's just been on my mind.
Yeah,
and then the other thing I noticed on your website that you use the term regenerative agriculture a lot. That's kind of this growing, there's growing interest in regenerative agriculture, and people are talking about it in lots of different ways. Has that been a focus of Wolf's Neck for a long time? Is that a new project? And can you talk a little bit about what that means? Like how you approach regenerative agriculture?
Definitely. So, the term regenerative agriculture is relatively new. Mm-hmm. The practices certainly are not. Historically, the way that farming has happened here at Wolf's Neck definitely fits into what most people are considering regenerative agriculture.
Right.
Has it always been called regenerative agriculture here? No. We called it, and actually in the founding documents, we called it alternative farming.
Huh.
And that was kind of a precursor to organic farming.
Well, and the funny thing is you called it alternative, and probably if you went back like a couple decades before that, it would have been traditional farming, right?
Like, that's very true.
Like before,
that's very true.
Before we changed the, that's kind of a, anyway, sorry,
so
I didn't mean to interrupt.
We're coming full circle, I guess.
Yeah.
So the regenerative for us has been an exploration into the connection really between agriculture and climate,
mm-hmm.
because that's clearly become a big area of conversation and study, and there's a growing consciousness around the role that agriculture plays within climate and within the environment. And so about 6 years ago, we set kind of a new course for Wolf's Neck that had us kind of repositioning as a training farm, recommitting to this place as an educational farm,
mm-hmm.
and as a research farm. And so I think that for us, the regenerative piece is though we're calling it regenerative now, it's always been here, and it I think when we kind of discovered that this was a movement that we kind of were already a part of, it felt very normal for us to just then begin to use that terminology. And that's not the only term that we'll use. I mean, there are a lot of terms I'm sure that you see being used somewhat interchangeably. I mean, you certainly see agroecology.
Right.
Biodynamic farming. I mean, there's a number of different terms that are nearly interchangeable, but not entirely. And of course, there's a lot of interpretation in terms of how people define and use those terms. I think that the simplest way to think about it, and the way that we think about it, is that regenerative agriculture is about outcomes on the land, mm-hmm. and in the soil. And so, because a lot of times I'll hear people say, well, what's the difference between organic and regenerative? And,
right.
you know, organic is it's a standard that's based on actions, essentially, and, mm-hmm. and those actions are kind of what happens at the beginning of the process.
Like regulating inputs.
This, yeah, exactly. The farmer put this on the land or didn't do this or fed their animals this or didn't feed their animals this. And certainly, I think within the core spirit of organic agriculture, the desired outcomes are very, very much aligned with regenerative agriculture. But regenerative agriculture, I would say, is really less maybe about a label and really more about science and really more about the outcomes on the land. And are we building soil health? And that is the wonderful thing about that is that that's quantifiable, that we can determine or should be able to determine if we are regenerative. And so that's a big part of what we've been focused on, and I heard you reference Open Team in mm-hmm. your opening remarks, and so that's really where that project came from, was our desire to find a way to help farms quantify their outcomes, and not just for the farmer, but also for the consumer, who might want to know if the company that they're buying food from sourced their products and their ingredients from regenerative farms,
right.
And from farms that are improving soil health, and farms that are increasing biodiversity, that are improving air and water quality, and kind of all of those things that kind of fall under the umbrella of ecosystem services. And those things also can be quantified, and so we're teaming with kind of a global collaborative, essentially, of universities and technology companies, with food companies, and with government agencies, all who are essentially already working in this space. But I think what we found through a convening that we hosted in Florida. Two or three years ago with the Foundation for Food and Agriculture Research, was that there are a number of different activities happening out there, especially related to kind of the digital space, that I think weren't as collaborative as we think that they needed to be. And they agreed, and so we formed this collaborative called Open Team that essentially just launched this year with funding from that foundation, from FAR. And so we're thrilled about that project. We feel like it's a great fit for our work here, and it gives us an opportunity to work with a bunch of great partners to really try and help advance the movement, if you will, around being able to measure and quantify and report what's happening on our farms. Because that's to us, I think that's a real. And to many others, that's a real missing link in terms of how are we going to scale up a form of agriculture that can be part of the solution to climate change.
Absolutely. I think we need to take a quick commercial break, and I think this is a good point to do that because I want to ask you a lot more about Open Team. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll dig into Open Team.
This episode is brought to you by Nourish and Flourish, a handcrafted, independent publication taking readers on a journey from the soil to the stars. Nourish and Flourish showcases thought-provoking stories from around the world and stunning photography. Each issue explores emerging trends in food, nutrition, recipes, soil health, technology, regenerative agriculture, travel, and more. Volume 1 of Nourish and Flourish includes features on the Svalbard Global Seed Bank, the International Symposium on Bread, and ancient Hawaiian aquaculture. Are you interested in eating healthier and learning more about where your food comes from and living a more connected life? Subscribe today at nourishandflourish.site. For $29.99, you'll receive 3 issues. That's 38% off the retail price. Nourish and Flourish. Connecting readers with the people and stories that make a difference in living a more balanced, healthier life. Subscribe today or find a retailer near you at nourishandflourish.site.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Katie Kiefer, and I'm the host of What Doesn't Kill You here on HRN. Every week, I sit down with journalists, authors, scientists, or activists to identify and explain some of the key issues in our food system. I've done shows on food waste, labor issues, meat production, water, you name it, I cover it. You can find What Doesn't Kill You wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, we're back. This is Lisa Held. You're listening to The Farm Report. I'm here with Dave Herring from Wolf's Neck Center, and we're talking now about Open Team, a new initiative that just launched in September. So, Dave, you were talking about how Open Team is about measuring and quantifying, reporting what's happening on our farms. I was looking at the materials on it, and it's described as an open source technology ecosystem. I have no idea what that means. So there's all this language about how it's this tech ecosystem. Can you just sort of give us the, like, what is it? What is Open Team? What does it actually do?
You got it. And it is not an easy project to understand, nor is it an easy project necessarily to communicate about, in part because it has so many different layers or so many different kind of different values that will apply to different people. So yeah. I'll talk about it from a variety of different perspectives and do my best to specify from whose perspective I'm talking about.
Okay.
So let's start with and before I jump into that, open source is essentially the opposite of proprietary. So if you think about it this way, so by creating a platform using an open source that is accessible and free and known to others, it really helps provide a culture and a spirit of collaboration and of innovation. And so one of the sayings that we like is, let's not compete on the science.
Okay.
Let's all work together. And by having an open source platform really enhances the opportunity of developers, of hardware and software companies, and then it also gives access to researchers and companies that would potentially value that data either to help build out data sets for their research or for companies to help use aggregated information from the system to be able to report out on their sourcing practices, etc. So that I guess it was important just to speak specifically to what's this whole open source thing about.
Okay.
So from a farmer perspective, so let's start with the farmer. Farmers are there are a number of different tools, technological tools that are developing out there that farmers could potentially be using. But one of them is just a management system, a digital management software system, where they are inputting their information. It's kind of for record keeping. It's for tracking what they did, where they put their animals, how much they fed. And that information historically has been stored either just in paper files, on notepads, or maybe in spreadsheets or on whiteboards.
Mm-hmm.
And so with this platform, we're really trying to kind of help advance a more efficient and a more kind of technological approach to managing farms.
Okay.
So farmers enter all of their information, all of their actions. And by doing that and by creating this platform where we can connect in with all of these other different tools that are out there, the idea is that a farmer would enter in their information once and they would get access to a variety of other systems and feedback. So one way to think about that is it's almost like a Google account for a farmer.
Okay.
So when you sign into your Google account, if you hop onto Google or hop onto Facebook or hop onto YouTube or hop onto any of these other things, you're essentially already logged in. You don't have to keep logging in and logging out. And so that's kind of a piece of what this project will do, or one of dozens of benefits for what this project will do is we're essentially creating interoperability between all these different things happening out there, all these different advancements that are happening out there, that unless there's a convening force, a kind of a trusted third-party nonprofit like Wolfsnack coming to the table and saying, we have to create this so that simply for the greater good, you know, it's not happening out there. And so we felt like that was a real need, and when we talked to a number of our partners, it was clear that that was the case. It's a project that many universities and food companies and others have a great deal of interest in, but none of them could necessarily launch it in the way that we could, simply because we're a nonprofit organization with a mission, so that's kind of our role within it. So that's the farmer piece. From a food company piece, there's increasing amount of desire for consumers to understand more about the sourcing practices from the companies that they're purchasing from.
Right.
And that's only going to grow. And so, and we're seeing that a bit with, you know, so let's take Applegate, for example, real quick. They're launching, and I don't remember the name of it, New Food Collective, I think is what it is. They're launching a new line of products. I think it's maybe like a sub-brand of theirs that is purported to be all from regenerative farms.
Okay.
And I think that that's amazing, and yet I also know that they are... As with any time that you put out kind of a big ambition like that, I think they're going to be working hard to figure out, okay, how does that all work? And how can we quantify that? And how can we report out on that? And how can we guarantee that the farms that we're sourcing from are regenerative farms? Mm. And so, you know, there are companies like that that are out there, and certainly Stonyfield was our founding corporate partner on this. And Stonyfield kind of has a history of leading on initiatives like this and being a leader kind of in the sustainability space. And so they're, from a food company perspective, General Mills is also a partner and has recently committed to sourcing, I think, I don't remember how many acres of oats regeneratively, but also same kind of thing. I think they're really interested in figuring out how a project like Open Team and a platform like Open Team can help them accomplish their corporate goals around sustainability and transparency in their sourcing practices.
So would the company be using the technology sort of like they'd be using it to check on their farms and keep track of their farm, the farms they're sourcing from and their practices, or would the consumer actually be using the technology?
Good question. The farmer would be using their technology. So a big part of kind of the implementation and the launch of Open Team is that we are developing hub farms, of which Wolfsnack is essentially the first hub farm. And there will be dozens of other hub farms located throughout the country and around the world that are all going to be and have been identified based on so that they represent a diversity of geographic areas and of different types and scales of production systems.
Okay.
But also within certain supply chains. So Stonyfield will have a farm or two within their supply chain, and certainly Wolfsnack is one of them that will be a hub farm. And there are hub farms that are developed that we're developing elsewhere throughout the country and around the world that. Essentially, we'll be testing this interconnection of all of these various systems, as well as the platform that the farmers are going to be using. And once we kind of go through this kind of R&D process, if you will, on these hub farms and work out those kinks, the idea is that, and the vision is that, we will then begin implementing this on farms at a much larger scale. And so the idea is that eventually all farms would be using a platform like Open Team or using Open Team to both enter their data as well as provide feedback and reporting and verification to either directly to their consumers through some platform that has maybe yet to be determined or directly to the companies that are purchasing their food in the case of a wholesale business well, to some degree, like our organic dairy where we sell directly to Stonyfield.
Right. Can you give an example of the kind of data that a farmer would be putting into the system?
Sure. So data that a farmer would input would be, okay, I moved these 40 cows onto paddock G on the west side of Middle Bay, and they grazed there for three days.
Right.
Then I moved them across the field to paddock F, and where they grazed for 2 days.
Okay.
And then they came back into the barn, and I fed them this ration of grain as well as mixed forages. So it's their actions that they're putting in there, and the idea is that then and I haven't completely finished describing the cycle of Open Team or the loop of Open Team, but
okay.
The idea is that there will be a variety of sensing systems in place. So either all of the above: satellite imagery, remote sensing, in-ground sensors, cameras. There are varieties, drones. There are a variety of different advancements that are going to be part of this sensing and analytics process that will help provide a feedback loop and help provide data that will go into things like agroecosystem models that will help determine kind of what the farmer's next move should be, and help inform their practices in subsequent seasons and in future years. And they'll be able to look back at their records and see, okay, well, I did these things this year, and that combined with this weather data and this sensing systems that were in place, these are the outcomes that I created. And it will become increasingly sophisticated over time as more data is entered and as more time has passed, so that eventually they're going to be able to get kind of recommendations, site-specific recommendations, so that farmers can move towards a more adaptive management style.
Hmm.
Where they're continually improving their practices and in turn continually improving the natural resources, soil health and air and water quality and biodiversity and et cetera.
So that's where it's sort of being pitched as this system that will address soil health and mitigate climate change, and that's where that would come in, because you're essentially taking the data and then using the data to improve agricultural practices, which then in turn will have an impact on the environment.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And the goal here is that we're talking about regenerative agriculture and knowing what we want to improve. And if we farm with a lot of assumptions, and those
mm-hmm.
assumptions are based on our own personal experiences on farm, maybe the experiences of others that we learned from or have worked with, and really a system like this is going to be used to help validate those assumptions and challenge those assumptions. And we may discover, you know what, doing our rotational grazing in this way doesn't actually build soil health, but if we do it this way, it does. And so there's a lot, and we haven't really spoken necessarily to the research angle of this, but there's a lot of research being done out there, and researchers that we're partnering with are honestly kind of clamoring at the possibility of building out their data sets and being able to have a lot more information to test their hypotheses and really to be able to determine, okay, wow, so we tested this on 3 farms, but now I have information from 3,000 farms about this, and that really helps strengthen their case and their story, depending on what it is they're working on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's really fascinating, and also I definitely understand why this is difficult to communicate about. It's super super complex, and it's not something you can easily visualize, I think, as a as a consumer or maybe even a farmer. But the thing that comes to mind for me in talking about this is it seems like such an incredible project, but I guess at this point in time, are there enough farms to even be collecting this kind of data from? And, you know, my mind goes to, well, most farms are still farming in ways that, you know, are not regenerative, you know, monoculture crops and concentrated animal feeding operations. And how do we, it's sort of putting all these resources into making regenerative better. Does that, it doesn't really address getting farms that aren't regenerative to switch over?
You know, that's a great point. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of organizations and businesses out there that are working on various aspects of this movement of essentially what we call an essential agricultural revolution that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Because when you read stats like from scientists at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization that say within 60 years all global topsoil could be gone.
Right.
It's like we're well past the point of needing to have a sense of urgency. We're in a critical spot. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, no one entity can do everything, but everybody needs to do something. And
right.
You know, I think we're heartened to see other efforts, whether it's things like the 4 per 1,000 initiative or Kiss the Ground or, you know, work happening at partner farms and organizations like Stone Barn Center and Rodale and, you know, obviously a lot of great companies out there from Patagonia and Stonyfield and others who, you know, are really taking leadership roles. And I think that our feeling is that really the biggest change agents that are out there are each and every one of us as consumers. And you know, I have young kids and I also have relatives who are millennials who I am not. But my sense is that the questions that these younger people are asking about their food didn't cross the minds of myself or other people in my generation, mm-hmm. I guess, and certainly didn't cross the minds of people in the generation before us, because in some ways it's that generation that grew up in the 40s and 50s that was very much part of kind of, you know, more of a chemical agriculture and industrial agriculture that we're really working toward to unravel at this point and try and kind of take back the land, if you will, and work with it instead of against it. And so, you know, our hope is that a platform like Open Team will help. And this is actually another benefit that I haven't mentioned, but our hope is that farmers in the future are being paid for things beyond just their product.
Mm-hmm.
That they're being paid for the services that they are providing to society. And those services would come in the form of carbon sequestration or ecosystem services or both. And our feeling is that a project like Open Team could help provide the basis for those platforms, things like the Terraton initiative at Indigo Ag, which is terrifically ambitious, and our hope is that Open Team can play a role in helping advance that. And so, you know, I think when farmers are continually crunched on pricing and making very little margin, there's going to come a time when we need to reward the farmers who are doing things the right way.
Right.
And consumers can choose to do that, and companies can choose to source from those farmers. And our hope is that a project like Open Team really helps strengthen that movement and fits in kind of some of the missing links that are really required to advance this revolution.
Right. That reminds me of something I wanted to ask you about in terms of farmers being paid for ecosystem services. One thing that I think a lot of people have mentioned to me in the last few months is in that movement, it seems like there's some confusion or uncertainty about measuring carbon sequestration. Is Open mm-hmm. Team looking at all? You know, it's sort of this big question, like, well, we know certain practices help increase carbon in the soil, but how will we actually measure what farmers are doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, and OpenTeam is definitely looking at that and definitely partnering. A number of the partners within OpenTeam are specifically working on initiatives like that. So there's an initiative that grew out of Yale called the Quick Carbon Project, where they have this really amazing little handheld device that you put a spoonful of soil in, and it gives you a quick analysis based on LED lighting and the refraction of the light within the soil and stuff that's like well beyond my understanding essentially, but it's a method for determining how much carbon is in that soil, and so they're they're one of the partners in OpenTeam, and so there are a number of initiatives that are out there that are advancing around this need to determine, are we sequestering carbon through these farming practices? And so the hope is that by creating this platform and creating this kind of this feedback loop with a variety of these different analytics kind of plugged in to the system, essentially, our hope is that we're able to provide that type of verification that companies will need and that farmers will need and that consumers want.
Right. What's the timeline? Like, so, you know, it sort of was announced that OpenTeam launched. Does that mean that data is already being collected right now as we speak? And, like, when will it sort of be a thing that farmers could use as a tool and a resource? Is it going to take a while to build up the data?
So all good questions. So OpenTeam,
all at once.
Exactly.
So I'm going to see if I can take those.
Yeah, one at a time, or maybe just provide kind of a narrative that maybe answers all of them. Mm-hmm. So OpenTeam right now, as it stands, is a 5-year project.
Okay.
And that being said, I think that all of us who are involved in it, I think, are increasingly understanding and expecting that it essentially will be phase one of a multi-phase project. But essentially, our hope is that by the end of 5 years, our hope is that there are thousands of farms using OpenTeam in the way that we have described.
Okay.
And that during the first few years, our focus is really on creating interoperability between a variety all these various systems and analytics that are out there, building out the user platform using a human-centered design process, and really making sure that it is it's going to work for the farmer in the way that it needs to. And then once we have kind of built that out and tested it on a core group of a dozen or more hub farms, the idea then is that we begin implementing it through supply chains and through different production systems and in different countries, so that we can then be prepared for a bigger rollout probably in years 4 and 5, where we go from, you know, after years 1 and 2, a couple dozen farms, to years 3 to 4, where, you know, it'd probably be more like 100 farms or more, to years 4 and 5, where it would essentially then go quickly from a couple of hundred farms to a couple thousand or more farms.
Got it. Okay. So it's going to ramp up pretty quickly.
Yeah. You know, we think so. And I mean, a good example of that, so let's take, we could take like Stonyfield, for example, because they're a founding partner. They source from thousands of farms when you consider the purchasing that they're making through their partner at Crop. But, you know, I think their hope is that they can test this on a handful of farms and be a core part of OpenTeam, and that they'll get to a point where then implementing it across their supply chain will be a relatively easy thing to do, because they were involved at the ground floor of testing and of developing and kind of as part of that R&D process. So there's a real benefit, I guess, of being in early, and I think certainly that's where Stonyfield is coming from.
Right, absolutely. Well, Dave, thank you so much for being here and for talking us through OpenTeam. I feel like we're going to need to check in on it in a couple of years to see, like, you know, where it's at and kind of get an update. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Well, we are too. I really enjoyed and appreciated the opportunity, Lisa, and happy to provide that update in due time. And it might even be nice along the way to check in with a partner or two within Open Team so that they can kind of share their testimonial and their story of how it's helping advance their goals and what they're working on. And of course, Lisa, if you want to come up to Maine and see it all in action and get a tour of Wolf's Neck, we're happy to do that for you.
Definitely. Let's make that happen. All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you all so
You're
much
welcome.
For listening to the Farm Report on Heritage Radio Network. If you enjoyed the conversation, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and share it. I'll see you next week.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.